Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey Bia's research grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B. Outdoor Science and Nature. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. The title of today's show is Human Changes Equal Animal Problems, and this is part one of the series. Today I will focus on the types of changes that we have made on many ecosystems that have an adverse effect on animals. Many things we have caused are reversible. So hey, there will be some answers going on here today. A vast majority of our society cares, but only a few will do something about it. And I know you listeners out there are the people that will do something about it, and that makes me happy. So today, and you'll find out towards the end, there is an answer. First, let's talk about a few negative changes. I need to start with a recent finding by scientists. It states this: there is a 20% change in the habits of animals, specifically nocturnal animals. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. So first, let's review a few categories that animals will fall into. Simple terms, an animal that's nocturnal. These are animals that are active at night. Example, raccoon. I got some good raccoon stories coming up in the show. Animals that are diurnal. They are active during the day. Now, crepuscular. It's a name that some people don't know. These are animals that are active early morning, early evening, white-tailed deer. The example I'm going to give you on that one, past weekend, Gabby and I are out, huge county park, I mean, thousands of acres. We're out for a bike ride. We're biking through, and it's hot. I mean, we're talking about like 80-plus degrees, 3 p.m., no animal that is crepuscular should be out. And there are deer walking about, being moved about and pushed about. So you see, sometimes some of the simple things, we go into the parks, and I'm not going to blame us, maybe it is part of us, but people that are in different places are moving and pushing animals just simply by being there. Now, if you were to look at a nighttime map of the United States and you saw the amount of light pollution, don't do it right now, but when the show is over, go Google a map of light pollution in the United States nighttime. It is amazing, and I say spectacular, not in a good ways. And if you look at the East Coast, it is like the East Coast is just lit up with light. And then look across, and you could figure out every major city, looking at Chicago and Denver and Vegas and so on. You'll see all this. Well, hey, do you live near a major city? But let's take a small town. You say, okay, so how much light pollution could be going on in a small town, and how could that have an adverse effect on animals? So let's take a look at this one. What about the street lights? What about the store lights? You may have a small little strip of stores in your town or a strip mall. Go there at nighttime, and they're lit up. Even when the stores are closed, again, it's marketing. You want to be able to see the sign, all that, but lights are on inside. What about car lights? What about house lights? Think about how simple this one is. So many homes right now, again, it's safety side, and I understand this, but something to think about, because you could change the duration that the light stays on for. What about motion sensor lights? We use these. Well, a deer is walking by your house at night, and all of a sudden, the lights go on. He is now cast into daytime. So nocturnal animals are sometimes seeing false daylight in the middle of the night, and some sensors that go on for minutes. And think about this. As long as the deer is moving there in that area, the light is staying on. So it's not like it goes on, it goes off. It goes on, deer are grazing, and the lights stay on. So you see, diurnal animals are saying, well, we call it animal talk. They're saying, hey, it's still light out here. So nocturnal animals are diurnal animals. Diurnal animals becoming not, and again, this is that 20%. No, they're not completely flipping and changing. But I'm saying to you is that this 20% change because it's just the amount of light. So these animals are becoming what we would say are true party animals. Those are animals that stay up late at night, play on words. Well, there's a new category for these animals. It's the I don't care what time it is animal. And I'm sort of being like a little facetious joking, but it's there's nothing that they can do about the light pollution. But there is always the story of animals that break rules. And I've had this with some of the wolves I've done research on, wolf number 51. I told a few stories about that. And I may have shared the story with you. There was a real old raccoon back on my property. And every afternoon, big old fat guy would just come, and I'm saying a roly-poly raccoon. He'd just come wandering through about 3:30, 4 o'clock. You could almost set your watch by him. And he was like, all right, I don't care what time it is. I'm still coming through. This is what I do. Not much time left in my life. And guess what? I'm going to do whatever I choose to do. It had nothing to do with any human change. It had to do with a change in a big old raccoon who just didn't care. Now, another major human change is building our homes anywhere without conscience. Well, so let me give you an example. At the shore, there's a family member of mine who bought a home in a 55 and over community. Until they started the construction, there are now 100 homes in an area that was a forested area. So let's talk about habitat loss. What if you were the little brown bat living in that forest ecotone? So here you are, you're a little brown bat, you're hanging out, and all of a sudden, where you live is gone. So again, I'm using one example of one animal in where 100 homes were built. And I know I'm going to share this story with you right now, the little brown bat. And sometimes I share stories, and you'll hear them in different shows. You go, ah, he's telling the same story. Well, it's getting to, you know, bang home a point somehow. Well, side of my home, I live in this beautiful old historic home. Trees around me, no exaggeration, 150-year-old. One of the 150-year-old oaks, when I first moved here, actually came and sawed my house in half. I used to say my house was a drive-through. It took a whole year to rebuild. Well, in the tree, next to my bedroom side, there was a 150-year-old oak. That's the one that came down. And there were three little brown bats living in that. And if you don't know this, on average, one little brown bat will eat about 1 million mosquitoes a night. So you're going, all right, so that's 3 million mosquitoes. Yeah, well, guess what? Once the tree came down, habitat loss, hey, it's just part of nature. It just came down on its own. Habitat loss, the bats are gone. Well, then the mosquitoes are here and they are repopulating. So now let's go to that 100 homes. And how many little brown bats were lost, and how many, you know, whatever animal, bobcats, et cetera, and just the list would go on and on and on. Now, here's another thing. That 55 and over community, which is now homes, and all lawn, and it is constantly sprayed with chemicals to maintain this lush monoculture lawn. So they're trying to get one grass type inside there, Bermuda grass, whatever they're trying to get, Kentucky bluegrass, whatever they're trying to get inside there, the monoculture. And, well, the chemicals aren't good for people. It's not good for the waterways. And where did all the animal go? Well, how much water is being used to water those lawns? And I'm telling you, it is vast amounts of grass that are there. I've actually driven past a golf course in Nevada, and the golf course in Nevada, think about this, in a desert, and it's lush green. Well, how much water did they use? Sort of off the tangent there. Well, we're talking about that first 55 and over community of one family member. My sister lives 2 miles away, not in 55 over community. She just lives there, and she has not had deer on her front lawn. And she just sent me a photo of a beautiful deer, antlers in velvet on her front lawn. I told her, hey, that's going to be a big old buck, man. And she hasn't had it. Well, where did it come from? Well, if we're taking habitat away and we're pushing animals, so that's what's going on. Now, on the other side of my sister, they have just cleared another forest in the same area for 100 homes. Remember, deforest changes are human changes, and they have an adverse effect on animals. So now let's go to forest and sagebrush fires. They're caused by three sources: lightning strikes, human error, or arson. Throughout time, naturally occurring fires by lightning strikes, they occur. This is part of nature, and hey, as environmental scientists, well, we just call it a rebirth, because guess what? It's something that we cannot control, and hey, it's going to happen. But the other types, well, we can prevent. So let's talk about this. In that part of the regrowth, we have cones, and I'll just say this, pine cones called serotonous cones, and they stay closed when they land on the ground, and they don't open until there is a fire. And when there is a fire, and after the fire is done and cooling, they pop open and the seeds come out and they regrow the area. Lodgepole pines, pitch pines do this. That's a great thing. But the opposite is this. This is the time of the year where we're, again, many people are in the outdoors. There's a vast amount of fires raging through the U.S. And typically on, you'll turn like the evening news and it'll show you a map of the United States and where all the fires are. Many of them are out west because there's so much tinder there, and that is the brush, the trees, etc. But they do happen everywhere. Well, here's one of the causes. Many humans are out there camping. They're not using the fire ring, which is placed in an appropriate area, or they overload the fire ring to make a bonfire. Now, these can easily get out of control. I'm going to let you know a little bit about human cause of fires. Well, some states will now make those individuals incur the costs for putting the fire out and the regrowth. So sometimes, hey, some fires can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars for the firefighters. And then to replant a side of a mountain, to replant a forest, to replant a grove. And some states are making individuals who started those fires, again, you're going to say, well, it was incidental. Well, if we're going to control it in the fire ring, if we're going to not have big bonfires, like all of those things we need to, really understand. Here's another story. I know they shared this on another show. I was out in Idaho doing some plant research out in the sagebrush steppe. We were there doing research out, and again, it's a flat area. It's funny. You get up to the top of the Rockies, 9,000 feet, and it flattens out, and there's a desert. And just like, hey, this is the cool part of nature. So I'm out there doing research in non-native plant species, and we see a small sage fire. Find out that day that 40 acres had burned. Within a matter, and I think it was close to 2 days, not much after, the winds picked up. Within 2 days, 40,000 acres burned. It was caused by human error, not a lightning strike. So you see, we can and we must make some changes to this. Now, I need to address the issue of arson. I spoke to my good friend, Inspector Dave, who has investigated many fires. There's a great section in his book, and you should pick it up, and I'm telling you that because he's a good friend of mine, but the book happens to be great. The title of the book is called Fire in Our Lives, and he discusses this in detail. And this show is brought to you by Barkerstown Brew, the advanced hydration drink for your dog. 6 natural great flavors. Go to barkerstownbrew.com. So what happens to animals during these intense blazes? So you're saying, okay, that's a human change. What happens? Animal problems. How about burrowing animals? When there is a fire, many of the burrowing animals will think that the safety is inside their home. That's their habitat where they normally live. They go inside there, and with the intense heat of the ground, no joke, they're cooked alive inside their burrows. Another thing. Major fires, huge dispersal of animals. Dispersal means a movement into or out of an area, and obviously they're going to move out of an area because of the fire. Well, they're going to go to the next adjoining piece of land, which is now overpopulated with many species. So you see, overpopulation, and we can get into all the causes of disease and starvation, etc. So let's talk about that we must control those fires. So what's the answer to all of this? You know, I just said it's part one. Well, as I travel, film, and speak at different venues around the country, I'm always discussing protecting and preserving habitats. Just who I am. The best way individually is to personally take care of your piece of the puzzle. So where do you live? Can you curb some of your light pollution? Can you educate someone about the topic? Can you prevent a forest fire on your next outing? Safety first, always. Give you a simple little example. We have a fire pit outside my home, and we love to sit there at nighttime and just, hey, sit and hang out, maybe an adult beverage or two, guitars, whatever, just hanging out, enjoying ourselves. But if it is a windy day, I have officially just let family and friends know, canceled. We will not have a fire this evening. Cannot be. So, again, making a conscious decision so we can make a positive effect on, hey, my home too, and the properties near me, and all of the forest and the animals. So I'm going to let you know that. Here's the deal. Remember, you can make a difference. Until next time, enjoy life's adventures. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.